It comes perhaps as a surprise to learn that in fact the Feast of the Epiphany existed in the Christian Church hundreds of years before the Church ever got round to celebrating Christmas or the Feast of the Incarnation. In fact, in Spain, they still make much more of the Epiphany than Christmas even today, calling it the Three Kings, and that's when gifts are most commonly exchanged amongst Spanish people. Well, the reason why the Church cottoned on to Epiphany first is that, of course, although Jesus came to proclaim his message to his own people to renew the covenant community and call them to a higher standard of life with God, only a minority of his people followed him. And rather strangely, the outsiders, the Gentiles, were the people who got the message and embraced it enthusiastically. In other words, the outsiders became the insiders. Jesus had intended, first of all, his own people, and then they would be the light to lighten the Gentiles. But that's not the way it happened. And so the outsiders, the Gentiles, reading the gospel accounts, were mighty interested in the visit of the three wise men and saw this as the first prefiguring of the fact that the gospel was intended for universal consumption and was meant to travel far and wide and include them. So that's the first thing for us to grasp hold of. This is the fact that the gospel's for export. And of course, we ourselves, here at the bottom of the world, must be grateful for what I would call the great missionary expansion of the Christian faith in the 19th century, by which it became for the first time a genuine world religion. So the missionaries who came here to New Zealand, amongst the first Europeans to ever arrive, had brought something really worthwhile with them. The gospel didn't just spread by colonists arriving and bringing their Christianity with them. And one thing, I mean, we may think that's a very obvious thing to have happened. It wasn't. Take, for instance, the Baptists, who we now think of as the most evangelical of evangelicals. In fact, when I recall one of their great missionary heroes, William Carey, after whom their theological college in Auckland is named, Carey Baptist. Well, when William Carey proposed to the Baptist denomination in England in the 18th century that he thought would be a tremendously good idea to carry the gospel into the lands of Asia, and he wanted to be a pioneer in all that, he got a severe talking to by senior leaders in the Baptist Church. "Young man," said one senior pastor, "if God intended the heathen to be converted, he would do it without requiring your services or ours. He would make this happen on his own." So, in a sense, the Christian Church has always had to be jolted awake again and again to the fact that, as William Wilberforce, 19th century Bishop of Oxford, said, with Christianity it's a matter of admit, submit, commit and transmit. Well, the commit and transmit bits often been quite difficult for Christians. And so we stand really on the shoulders of others in the terms of the gospel we've received, and always need to remember that it's for giving to others, and also to take a keen interest in the overseas mission of our church. This parish is committed to support Jonathan Hicks and his family have just arrived in the Solomons, where Jonathan, having been trained in theology here at Otago, is going to teach at a local theological college. And it's a reminder that the keen interest we should take in that family is a harking back to the fact that we've received the faith from other people. Now, there's more than just the very obvious business about transmitting the Christian faith, but this business of including outsiders in the faith and giving it to them is that as the gospel enters new culture groups, new language groups, new ethnicities, it's like a jewel that's polished up to reveal other parts of the glory and beauty of this jewel. It's not that Christianity is an evolving faith, as St. John of the Cross said, in Jesus Christ God has spoken his last word, there isn't going to be another word, but there are aspects of the gospel that come into clearer relief, clearer focus. Its richness is further developed and exposed because people, different groups, latch onto different aspects of it as the group, the part of it that led them into it all, that they got enthusiastic about. So as the gospel creates small churches around the world, different parts of the richness of the gospel story comes into clearer relief through further reflection and through the different cultural experience of those people. Now, I want to leave you with one last thought about the Feast of the Epiphany. It's very clear from the gospel story we just heard that Herod was very alarmed by the news about a possible Messiah in his domain, and wanted the three wise men to lead them to him so he could eliminate him, terminate with extreme prejudice, as they used to say in the war in Vietnam. And the real significance in terms of power politics of the arrival of the three wise men at the stable is that suddenly the axis of world history has changed. Now the machinations of the Roman Empire and the evil designs of local rulers have kind of been pushed into the background. Now, where the action really lies is in this humble stable. And the point of the adoration of whether they're three wise men or three kings is that this is where the focus of world history has come to be. This is where the action really is. And that despite all the machinations of evil rulers, God's providence overrules all that. God's providence prevails and makes things happen the way he wants it to happen. And that's a reminder to us, as my final message to you, never to be deceived by apparently discouraging circumstances. Weaving and working his way through the warp and woof of history of our time too, God's purposes are advancing despite what appears to be happening on the surface. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit.